This morning we're going to start in 1 Kings chapter 12. We're talking about gentleness. We started last week by saying gentleness is not weakness. Talk about gentleness in terms of meekness and having power and being able to control that power, use it properly. In 1 Kings chapter 12, we meet the fourth king of Israel. The first three are very well known. I probably could ask you to name the first three, and you'd do pretty well. Saul, David, Solomon. The fourth guy, Solomon's son, Rehoboam. Now, even if you knew about Rehoboam, you might get him mixed up, because he was actually, you might know, the first king of the southern divided kingdom, and the first king of the northern divided kingdom was Jeroboam. So even if you know about Rehoboam and Jeroboam, you can get them mixed around. I think I've got them right. Yep. Rehoboam was not supposed to be king over just the southern kingdom. He wasn't supposed to be over a smaller part of land than his father and his grandfather and Saul. Rehoboam, very early on, had a choice to make of how he was going to be king. Talked about having power. King over Israel is great power. The people came to Rehoboam in 1 Kings chapter 12. And there had been some stirrings that some people would rather have Jeroboam as king. But they understood what God had done through David and Solomon. And they understood that they were better together, stronger as a unified nation, and they were going to give it a try if Rehoboam agreed. You see, the people had a problem with how they had been treated under Solomon. Solomon did a lot of good things. Solomon did a lot of great things. We look at Solomon as a good example most of the time when we look at Solomon. We see Solomon building the temple, building great palace. But when we look closer, we realize Solomon didn't build the temple, right? Solomon made plans for a temple and got a bunch of people to build it for him. We don't know the numbers, all of the numbers of the people that were supposed to build. We know that when he started the building project, he conscripted 30,000 laborers to go get wood. Of course, conscripted is a nice word for made somebody go work for him. Right? Not taking bids and interviewing firms. He said, 30,000, your job is go get wood. We know that in the preparing the timber and the stone, getting ready to build the temple, the text tells us about 153,300 people, most of them conscripted, some of them in management. Thousands of people to get ready for this building project. And I wasn't able to find numbers for the actual project because all it says is Solomon built. Solomon laid these things of gold. These people who came to Rehoboam, They said, we have been put to work and hard work by your father. And we see under the reign of Solomon, Solomon became very, very wealthy. We tell the story that you know he asked for wisdom and got the other things too, right? We told that Solomon received annually 666 talents of gold. My footnote says about 25 tons of gold given in tribute to Solomon. And that came from somewhere. Right? We read it as here is the glory and grandeur of Solomon, God's king. His people are saying that came off of our backs, that came out of our pockets. They came to Rehoboam and said, things were hard under your father. And so when they came to Rehoboam, this is in 1 Kings 12, verse 4, says, your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you. So Rehoboam had a choice. Does he listen to what these people are asking? Or does he continue and do what is fully his right as king to be harsh and keep this yoke on the people? He said, go away for 3 days and then come back to me and I'll give you an answer. And he gathered up his advisors. First he asked the elders who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. So how would you advise me to answer these people? They replied, if today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants. He said, these are your people. They are making a request. They are wanting to find a way to still be your people, but they're asking for some concessions. Rehoboam didn't like that. He said, there's got to be a better answer. And so he went to some of the younger advisors who had grown up with him. And they said, tell these people who have said to you, your father put a heavy yoke, but make the yoke lighter. Tell them, my little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. Now, I don't know. I have a hard time picturing what scourging with scorpions looks like, but you get the idea. It's less pleasant. I don't know exactly the small finger and waist, if this is talking about, you know, if you're talking about weight on your shoulder, finger versus, you know, climbing up and sitting down. I don't know if that's what he's talking about, but you get the idea. They said, you have asked for something, and I am going the other direction. That day, Rehoboam ceased to be the king of the unified kingdom of Israel. The people responded by raising up Jeroboam as their preferred king, and at the end of the conflict, you had the northern kingdom of Israel, which was about 10 of the tribes, and you had the southern kingdom of Judah and Benjamin, much smaller, that Rehoboam remained king of, and that's, you know, he still was king at Jerusalem, but he was no longer king of all Israel as his father and his grandfather were. Rehoboam acted in a way that was his right. He was king. Kings make taxes. Kings conscript soldiers and laborers. He didn't do anything unlawful. He did what he wanted. He did something because he could. Rehoboam took on this mentality that we see a lot from those who have power, even if it's a little power. That you do something, why? Because I can. It's the mentality of a bully, right? I shared some about some regrets that I have of some things that I did when I was younger of bullying. And I shared the reason I did it is because I felt that I had very little power, but I had enough power to mess with those kids. Why'd I do it? Because I could. Because of those things that I couldn't do, and I took out that frustration here. We're talking about gentleness. Gentleness is not weakness. Gentleness is recognizing your power and how to use it. Rehoboam was not a gentle king. Rehoboam had power, and he wielded power as he saw fit, and he lost a great deal. Rehoboam did not follow the example of his grandfather, David. David had great power, probably greater than Rehoboam, even at the beginning there. David was able to step back and realize the things that are more important. Think about David in the cave, sneaking up on Saul. Could have ended all of his problems. Nobody would have questioned him on it. Nobody would have probably thought less of him. That man wants to kill you. You have the opportunity to end that threat. David could have very easily said, "Why did I kill the king of Israel? Because I could." Instead, he says, "I am not going to kill God's anointed king." Fast forward, and David is king. And as his son, Absalom, thinks he should not be king anymore, runs him out of the palace, runs him out of Jerusalem, threatens his life, makes it clear that he's just, the reason he hasn't come after him is because he hasn't come up with the best plan yet to kill him. I know I've talked about this story because it's one of my favorites when it comes to the character of David and the way he carried himself. His instructions consistently to his mighty men were act gently toward Absalom. And even when he had the power to end the threat, he did not want to end his son. And he wept when somebody did. That was the example that we saw of the king of Israel. That was not who Absalom, it wasn't who Absalom was, but what I meant to say here, that's not who Rehoboam was. Rehoboam had power and he did what he wanted because he could. I think we see this type of mentality too often around us. What can you get away with? How much influence can you exert? How much can you lean on your neighbor, those who you work with? What can you do? How much can you get away with? And it's sad. I don't think we ought to have the mentality of a bully. We ought not to have the mentality of the one who takes his power to use it against someone else. To use our power to hurt others. And honestly, it's getting worse among those in power, I believe. You see any discussions about those who are meant to lead, and we get into these discussions of how can we tear someone else down? What can we do to have more influence? For nearly four decades, there's been one primary example of this type of because I can bully business lifestyle approach. It's been an example warned against in countless sermons on the subject of greed and of misused power. And as I see it, now that he used these techniques to become president, the response among politicians has been not to ask how we can learn to be better, but the response has been, well, I guess that's how you win. I guess that's what works. And both parties and everywhere you look have decided that governing must mean bullying. I mean, this election cycle has already been packed with that message on all fronts. And aren't we called to be better than that? Didn't God call his people to be something more? Even before the church and before the cross and before the incarnation, we were told that God's people were about something more than doing what you can because you can. I mean, think about Deuteronomy. Look after the orphan, the alien, the widow. Look after those who can't take care of themselves. Care about the people that God cares about. I mean, think about the laws about harvesting your crops. Don't go over your field a second time. You might drop some. Leave it. There are people that need more. Don't do the corners. Somebody needs that more. They were capable of maximizing profits. They were capable of making sure they get as much as they could. God said, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And we see, we were just talking about the book of Ruth in Tuesday class recently. We've been looking at our heroes from the Bible, and last time Barb was in class, she says, I want to talk about Ruth. So we talked about Ruth, and the next time Barb's back with us, we're going to talk about Ruth again. And we saw that type of restrained power, that type of gentleness, you could call it, on display. We saw, on one hand, Ruth, who would have been in a much better situation if she'd just gone home. Naomi knew it. She said, go home. Your parents are back there. You can find the new husband. You'll be cared for. It was within her power. It was within her rights. She didn't do it. She said, I'm needed here. You need me here. She went to the field to glean, to do what Deuteronomy wanted to make sure the people who needed it could do. And Boaz already acted in restraint by allowing those portions of his fields to be gleaned. And he was in his rights to say, you have what I had to give you. Go eat that. He said, I'm going to give you more. Hold out more. We saw how they were blessed. We saw how God worked in those actions and in that story and did something great. What, three generations later, David. Two generations later, Rehoboam. But we see how God uses these gentle actions. Not just from those with great power, but those who have very little, but they have some. Boaz was in a comfortable situation. He was doing well for himself. Ruth had very little, but she was able to use that power for something. Gentleness is not about doing whatever you can do, or whatever you have the power to do, or even whatever you're allowed to do. Gentleness recognizes that the things we do have an impact on those around us. We don't act in a vacuum. We were talking about on Wednesday, physics versus math. I like math. Happens in a vacuum. That's not the real world. Physics talks about how math really works. We don't live in a vacuum. We don't act in a vacuum. We live in a world filled with other people. And each one of those people matter to God just like we matter to God. And that means they ought to matter to us. We don't need more because I can type thinking. We have enough of that in the world. We're taught that all over the place. Because I can says that your neighbor is just your closest competitor. So do unto others before they can do unto you, right? Because they can. So do what you can. But we're called to something more, aren't we? Gentleness says there's enough room for everyone. It says that I should care about how my actions impact you and impact my neighbor and impact the person I've never met who's taking forever in front of me at the checkout lane in Kroger when I'm running behind. It matters. How many of us here are the type who, when you're having a bad day, you might as well have a sign that says, "Stay out of my way," hanging around your neck? What do we want to do when the things in our lives are out of control or uncertain or just plain scary? And why do we think it's going to make us feel better to bring someone else down to our level? Having a bad day? Get out of my way or I'm going to tear you down. Why do we think that's going to help? When you're feeling powerless over some area of your life and struggling to keep it together, do you feel the temptation to take it out on someone else in order to try to gain some feeling of power and control? Take it out on an easy target because you can. And who usually ends up on the other end of that? A coworker, waitress, telemarketer, faceless driver on your way home, kids, spouse. Gentleness is not being weak. Gentleness is about not allowing your strength to hurt others. Now, I asked you last week to think about what power each of you has. Did you do your homework? Maybe you thought of some big things like the power of the Holy Spirit. We've talked about that some recently, and we're going to get to that sort of power in the next couple of weeks. But did you think about the type of power that each of us wields simply by walking out the door each day and being a part of the lives of the people around us? There's power just in being around others. God didn't create us for isolation, and we don't live in a vacuum. By living around other people in this world, we become a part of their stories just like they become a part of ours. You hold power to impact numerous lives every day, and you can choose how that impact will be made. Be gentle. There are enough forces in this world willing to step on whomever necessary to get what they want because they can. We need to be anything but. We need to be better than that. We need to be gentle. Not weak, but rather following the example of Jesus. Jesus, who was held up in a crowd, remember, by a desperate woman trying to find healing. And he didn't see her as a nuisance, but he saw her as a daughter of God acting in faith. Jesus, who stood in front of another woman, guilty under the law, remember, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. He could have done it. I remember being a kid in a Bible class thinking, how funny, if Jesus had let the one without sin cast the first stone, they picked up a rock and chucked it. He could have, even under those guidelines. Under the guidelines of because I can, Jesus was fully justified to start throwing rocks. He could have turned his back on any of us. Because he could. We probably deserve it. But he didn't. The greatest power and gentleness born out of love. The way of Rehoboam is tempting. There is an allure to because I can. It makes us feel important and powerful, and people say good stuff about us when we put ourselves in a more powerful position. But Rehoboam lost far more than he gained. He hurt those he was meant to bless. Don't follow the way of Rehoboam. It's a trap, and it's not worth it. You have power. We have power. So many types of power. Great power. Be gentle with it. Next week, we're going to talk more about the way that Jesus showed gentleness and how we can learn from that. I would rather look at the example of Jesus than 1,000 Rehoboams. We have a lot to learn because we have great power and because it matters how we use it. But that's all for this morning. If there's anything you need, there is love here. We'd love to hear it. If there's anything you need, please come forward. Let us know as we stand and sing.
Have thine affections been nailed to us? Is thy heart right with God?